Picture the scene. It is late fall, 2013. You are sitting in a quiet, somewhat cramped office at New York University's Current Institute.
And a phone rings.
Exactly. A phone rings. And on one end of that line is a 29-year-old Mark Zuckerberg.
Right. And on the other end is a 53-year-old neural network researcher, Jan LeCun.
And, you know, that single phone call is about to redirect the foundational digital infrastructure of our world. So welcome to our deep dive into the book Jan LeCun, Father of Artificial Intelligence, specifically focusing on Chapter 9, Zuckerberg's Dining Table.
It really is a crucial chapter.
It is. Our mission today is to figure out how one dinner conversation at a tech billionaire's house essentially birthed a radically open corporate lab, a lab that basically handed the blueprints of modern AI to the public.
Yeah, we're looking at why this happened, and I think more importantly, how it shapes the technology that you interact with every single day.
Right. So to really grasp the weight of that 2013 phone call, we have to, I think, look at the atmosphere in Silicon Valley right at that moment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was this wild mix of sheer panic and massive exhilaration.
Totally.
And the catalyst for all of this was this event in 2012 where a neural network out of the University of Toronto.
Oh, AlexNet, right.
Right, AlexNet. It entered an international image recognition competition, and it didn't just win. It completely shattered all the existing records.
Which is crazy because, I mean, for 30 years prior to that, neural networks were treated as a scientific dead end.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, neural networks are essentially computing systems that are kind of inspired by the human brain's interconnected neurons. But the mainstream academic community had just cut their funding.
They were completely ignored.
Totally ignored. But suddenly, researchers figured out that if you feed these networks enough data and you run them on specialized gaming microchips.
GPUs.
Exactly, GPUs. If you do that, they could learn to recognize complex patterns almost magically. So overnight, AlexNet proved all the skeptics wrong.
And that triggered just an absolute gold rush for the people who actually knew how to build these things.
Yeah, a massive gold rush.
It's kind of like watching a professional sports draft where the stakes are billions of dollars, but, you know, only about five people on Earth actually know the rules of the game.
That is a perfect way to put it. Because the field had been starved of funding for literally decades, there were very, very few experts left.
Right. And Google moved incredibly fast here. I mean, they outright bought the company founded by Geoffrey Hinton, who was the creator of AlexNet.
Yeah, they just scooped him up.
And then they swooped into London to buy this little startup called DeepMind for hundreds of millions of dollars.
And Facebook had actually tried to acquire DeepMind, right?
They did, yeah. But they lost out to Google.
Yeah.
So you have Facebook, a company that had just gone public, and they are suddenly falling behind in the most critical technological arms race of the century.
Zuckerberg definitely knew they were exposed. I mean, at that time, Facebook had over a billion users logging on.
Right.
They're posting billions of photos, scrolling through feeds. And the algorithm deciding what to show those users was the core engine of their entire business model.
But he was looking past just optimizing ad revenue, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. He realized that to connect the next billion users, he needed fundamental, long-term machine intelligence.
So not just like an ad calculator.
Exactly, not just an ad calculator. He wanted systems that could seamlessly translate dozens of languages in real time across international borders.
Wow.
He wanted an AI capable of analyzing a user's uploaded photograph and audibly describing the scenery in perfect detail for a user who is visually impaired.
That's a huge leap from what they were doing.
It is. He didn't want to just apply existing tech. He wanted to invent the future of it.
Which brings us back to the dinner.
Yeah.
So LeCun flies out to California after that initial phone call.
Right.
But he doesn't end up in some sterile boardroom at Facebook headquarters. Zuckerberg actually invites him to his own home.
Sits him right down at his personal dining table.
Yeah, and essentially slides a blank sheet of paper across it. He tells LeCun to design a brand new AI lab from scratch and offers him an open checkbook.
Which is wild.
It is wild. But let's pause here for a second because we have to look at LeCun's background. He had this deep, incredibly painful history with corporate promises.
Oh, absolutely. The Bell Labs situation.
Exactly. Back in his prime years at Bell Labs, LeCun literally invented the neural network technology that American banks used to read handwritten checks automatically.
It was groundbreaking stuff at the time.
It really was. But when Bell Labs' parent company went through a corporate split, That technology, along with all its patents, got locked away in a corporate vault.
Completely suffocated by bureaucracy.
Right. So knowing that, you have to ask, why would a seasoned 53-year-old scientist ever trust a 29-year-old CEO who's promising him a blank check for pure science?
Well, the short answer is he was highly skeptical.
I bet.
Lacan knew firsthand that corporations love to fund pure research when interest rates are low and money is cheap. But, you know, the second the market demands quarterly returns, those research labs are the very first things put on the chopping block. So because of that trauma at Bell Labs, LeCun refused to just say yes at that dinner table. Instead, he laid out three non-negotiable conditions.
And these weren't about money, right?
No, they had nothing to do with his personal salary. They were structural demands. They were designed specifically to protect his identity and the identity of the team he would eventually hire as pure scientists rather than just corporate engineers.
So what were they? Because the first one, the first condition was just about location.
Yeah, he flat out refused to move to Silicon Valley. He insisted on staying in New York.
Okay, fair enough. And the second?
The second was the two hats rule. He wouldn't quit his job as a professor at NYU, where he had actually just founded the Data Science Center.
So he wanted to be at Facebook and NYU at the same time.
Exactly. He wanted to bridge the gap between academia and industry. He wanted to keep a really fluid talent pipeline flowing between the two.
Okay, but the third condition is the one that I think really challenges traditional business logic.
Oh, without a doubt. He demanded total radical openness.
Meaning what, exactly?
Lacan required that every academic paper, every mathematical formula, and every core line of code produced by this new lab had to be published and available to the general public.
Wait.
Yeah.
I have to challenge this, though. Giving away millions of dollars of cutting-edge R&D to your fiercest competitors. How on earth do you sell that to a corporate board?
It sounds crazy.
It sounds like absolute corporate suicide in the tech world. You're giving away the blueprints.
On paper, it does sound like suicide. But Zuckerberg and Facebook's chief technology officer, Mike Schrupfer, they actually agreed to it.
Why?
Well, Schrupfer had actually come from Mozilla, you know, the nonprofit behind the open source Firefox browser.
Oh, okay.
So he already deeply understood the mechanics of open source. But more importantly, I think they realized something fundamental about top-tier scientific talent.
Which was?
The absolute best minds in the world, that tiny handful of people Facebook desperately needed to hire away from Google, they would flat out refuse to work in a walled garden.
Because they want to publish.
Exactly. A scientist's true currency isn't just their salary. It's peer recognition, published papers, their legacy in the field. If you tell a brilliant postdoc that they can never publish their findings, they just won't work for you.
So total openness actually functioned as a recruitment strategy.
The ultimate recruitment strategy. It allowed Facebook to say to these researchers, hey, come here, use our massive server farms and keep your academic reputation completely intact.
That makes a lot of sense. So they kind of flipped the traditional corporate contract on its head.
They did.
And so in December 2013, Facebook AI Research, or FAIR as it became known, is officially born.
Right.
And the very first thing they do is broadcast this new philosophy to the entire academic world.
Yeah, they made a huge splash.
At the 2013 Neural Information Processing Systems Conference.
The NIPS.
Right, NIPS, which was an academic gathering that used to be pretty quiet, honestly. But Mark Zuckerberg personally walks the convention floor.
Handing out business cards to graduate students.
Just a massive signal to a community that had been, as you said, starved for cash, that the winter of AI funding was definitively over.
And that aggressive recruitment really fueled FAIR's global expansion. I mean, instead of forcing everyone to relocate to California, they just went to where the talent lived.
Which fulfills LeCun's first condition, basically.
Exactly. They opened labs in Montreal, Tel Aviv, London, and in 2015, they opened a massive lab in Paris.
And that Paris expansion is a really perfect case study of how this open philosophy actually worked in the real world.
It really is, yeah.
Because France has a highly robust public engineering and mathematical ecosystem. But FAIR didn't just drain talent from it.
No, they partnered with a French public research institute called NRIIA, and they utilized this government system known as CIRE.
And the CIFAR system is mechanically just fascinating. So under this setup, Facebook pays the salaries of PhD students.
Right.
And provides them with millions of dollars worth of computing power on Facebook servers.
Which is huge, because computing power is the absolute lifeblood of AI research. Without it, you just can't train large models.
But in exchange for all that money and server time, Facebook lets those students keep their full academic freedom.
They could publish whatever they found publicly.
So corporate capital was directly enriching the public French scientific ecosystem,
yeah.
while Facebook got to, you know, work closely with the absolute brightest young minds in the country.
It was a win-win. And that model of letting researchers focus on what they called blue sky projects.
Meaning projects looking 10 or 20 years into the future.
Right. Rather than focusing on the next quarter's product update. That model produced some undeniable triumphs.
Like what?
Well, in 2022, FAIR released the No Language Left Behind project. It was an AI capable of seamlessly translating 200 marginalized languages.
Wow, 200?
Yeah. And while that sounds purely altruistic, there is actually a hard business reality there. A global social network needs to capture data and serve ads in emerging markets to keep growing.
Right, so openness actually allowed them to solve a really complex technical barrier that was blocking their own global expansion.
Exactly. They also mapped hundreds of millions of protein structures and just gave that data to global pharmaceutical researchers.
That's incredible.
And they released massive data sets of material science to accelerate climate technology.
Okay, so it sounds like just an unbroken streak of wins. But any system dealing with experimental technology has vulnerabilities.
Oh, sure.
And in the fall of 2022, FAIR's open philosophy hit a major wall.
The Galactica incident.
Yes, a project called Galactica. So this was a large language model trained specifically on vast amounts of science textbooks, academic papers, and formulas.
The goal was to create, essentially, the ultimate scientific assistant for researchers.
But it hallucinated. When the public got access to the demo, they found it was mass-producing fake science.
Right.
Like citing non-existent papers with this terrifying authoritative confidence. And the backlash in the scientific community was fierce.
It was brutal.
FAIR was forced to pull the public demo offline in just 3 days. So I have to ask, doesn't this whole disaster prove the critics right?
How do you mean?
Doesn't it show that radical openness is fundamentally dangerous when you're dealing with technology that can convincingly automate lies?
Well, the researchers at FAIR definitely lost sleep over the Galactica incident. I mean, it was a massive public relations hit.
I can imagine.
But LeCun's perspective on this actually reinforces his core philosophy. You really have to look at the timeline here.
Okay.
Just a few weeks after Galactica was pulled down in disgrace, OpenAI released ChatGPT.
Oh, right.
And ChatGPT suffered from the exact same hallucination flaws. It also confidently invented falsehoods and fake citations.
It did, yeah.
Yet ChatGPT became the fastest growing application in human history.
So why was one pulled while the other succeeded?
Well, for LeCun, the fact that Galactica was brutally scrutinized and pulled down in 3 days was actually the open scientific method working exactly as intended.
Oh, I see.
Because it was open to the scientific community, thousands of independent researchers immediately stress tested it. They found the edge cases, exposed the flaws, and forced a correction.
So the argument is essentially that sunlight is the best disinfectant.
Exactly.
If Galactica had been a closed corporate system, just kind of quietly integrated into a company's back-end software, those dangerous hallucinations might have gone completely unnoticed for years.
Right. Quietly corrupting data behind the scenes. Openness basically allows for a global bug bounty.
That makes sense.
And despite the public stumble with Galactica, FAIR's open philosophy had already birthed something else, something that had unequivocally conquered the global AI landscape.
You're talking about PyTorch.
Yes, PyTorch. To understand why PyTorch was such a revolution, we kind of have to look at how agonizing AI research was before it existed.
Right. So before PyTorch, the dominant tool was Google's TensorFlow.
Right.
And the problem with TensorFlow was that it relied on something called static computational graphs.
Basically, yeah.
Meaning, if a researcher wanted to test a new idea, they had to write out this rigid, really complex architectural map of their entire code before they could run a single piece of it.
It's like having to draw the entire structural blueprint of a skyscraper just to test if one specific door handle works.
Exactly. And if there was a flaw anywhere in that massive map, finding it was an absolute nightmare.
It was incredibly frustrating for researchers.
So then along comes Samath Chintala and a small engineering team at FAIR. And they took an older, lesser-known research tool called Torch and they completely rebuilt it.
They rebuilt it to work seamlessly with Python, which is the programming language that most data scientists already knew.
Hence PyTorch.
Hence PyTorch.
Yeah.
But the real breakthrough was that PyTorch used dynamic computational graphs.
So dynamic instead of static.
Right. This meant a researcher could write a single line of code, run it instantly, pause the program, look at the math in real time, and just tweak it on the fly.
That is huge.
It turned a rigid, frustrating process into something fluid and experimental. It radically shortened the distance between a human having a creative hypothesis and a machine actually executing it.
And the adoption was just staggering, because coders naturally gravitate toward the tool that removes the most friction.
Absolutely.
By 2019, over half of all new AI research papers published globally were utilizing PyTorch.
And by 2022, that number crossed 75%. It became the absolute industry standard.
Even Meta's fiercest competitors rely on it, right?
Oh, yeah. Companies like OpenAI, Microsoft, NVIDIA, these companies are spending tens of billions of dollars trying to beat Meta in the AI arms race, but they rely on PyTorch to build their foundational models.
So they're using Meta's open source tool to compete with Meta.
Exactly. And LeCun frames this using a highway analogy.
How so?
Think of PyTorch as a public interstate system. If every single car company like Ford, Toyota, BMW had to buy land, pour concrete, and pave their own private highway networks just to test their vehicles, society wouldn't get anywhere.
The waste of resources would be catastrophic.
PyTorch became the public interstate of AI. It allowed the entire tech industry to stop wasting billions of dollars reinventing the asphalt and instead focus all their capital on building better cars.
And in September 2022, Meta made what I think is the ultimate commitment to that highway.
Yeah, they really did.
They didn't just keep PyTorch open source.
Yeah.
They completely relinquished corporate ownership of it.
Handed it right over to the Linux Foundation.
Which is an independent nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
And they helped form a governing board that included their biggest rivals, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, NVIDIA.
Right. Meta deliberately neutralized their own leverage over the tool.
Just to ensure that the bedrock of modern AI remains a neutral, protected public good forever.
And that concept of a public good, I think, leads us directly into the most consequential evolution of FAIR's open philosophy.
Right.
Because releasing the PyTorch software was one thing, but in 2023, Meta crossed a totally new threshold with a model called Llama. Right. They didn't just release the tools to build AI. They open-sourced the Llama model weights.
Which, we should clarify, what model weights actually are for you listening. Because when a company spends $100 million training an AI on massive supercomputers, the end result is a file containing billions of mathematical parameters.
And these are the weights.
These are the weights. It's basically the learned experiences, you know, the actual digital brain connections the AI formed after reading the entire internet.
Yeah.
Usually, companies lock those weights in a vault and they charge developers an API fee, essentially a digital toll booth, every time they want to ask the AI a question.
Right, but by giving away the Llama weights, Meta basically gave away the multi-million dollar brain itself for free.
And giving that away introduced a concept that is truly critical to the future of global tech, which is technological sovereignty.
Technological sovereignty, yes. It's the idea that a community or a nation should have direct control over the technology that shapes its reality.
Right.
Because think about it. If the only advanced AI models in the world are owned by three heavily guarded companies in Silicon Valley, then every single interaction a user has with an AI.
Every translation, every medical query.
Exactly. Every history question. It's all being filtered through a Californian corporate lens.
But by open sourcing the Llama weights, Meta allowed the rest of the world to bypass that filter entirely.
Exactly. Suddenly, a university lab in India can download a world-class foundational model for free. And they can fine-tune it to operate in regional dialects that big tech normally ignores because they aren't, you know, profitable enough.
Or a medical startup in Africa can build localized diagnostic bots without paying exorbitant API fees to gatekeepers in San Francisco. It decentralizes the power.
It does. But, and this is a big but, it also sparks the most intense, vicious debate in the tech world today.
Because of the safety concerns.
Right. There is a very vocal camp of experts, and this actually includes some of LeCun's oldest peers, like Jeffrey Hinton, who argue that open sourcing models of this magnitude is incredibly reckless.
Their argument is essentially that by giving away the weights, you are empowering bad actors.
Yeah, they worry that anyone can download an open source model, strip away the safety guardrails, and just use it to mass generate highly convincing phishing emails, deep fakes.
Or even recipes for biological weapons at scale.
Exactly.
But the counterargument, which is championed by LeCun, brings us right back to the Galactica incident, doesn't it?
It does. He argues that hiding the technology behind an API wall doesn't make it safe. It just makes the vulnerabilities invisible to the public.
Interesting.
He points to the history of the internet itself. I mean, the servers that run the modern web operate mostly on open source software like Linux,
Right.
and they are secure precisely because millions of independent hackers and researchers can view the code, find the security holes, and patch them faster than a small team of corporate engineers ever could.
So he maintains that community scrutiny is really the only way to build resilient systems.
Yes, it's a geopolitical debate that really doesn't have a definitive answer yet. But it clarifies exactly what was at stake during that dinner back in 2013.
Yeah, those three promises Zuckerberg made, allowing LeCun to stay in New York, honoring his commitment to the university pipeline, and enforcing radical openness, they were actually kept.
They weren't just empty corporate rhetoric designed to get a signature on a contract.
Yeah.
Those three conditions ultimately manifested into the digital roads that the modern internet now drives on.
Right.
Affair achieved what Bell Labs could not sustain. They built the technology and they actually kept the vault open.
It's honestly staggering to trace the lineage. You go from a 29-year-old offering a blank sheet of paper to the creation of a global scientific network to the democratization of the most powerful technology of our era.
It is staggering, but I think it leaves us with a deeply provocative question as we look to the future.
Let's.
Well, we've seen that FAIR thrived in an era when interest rates were near zero, right? Venture capital was cheap, and AI was still largely considered an academic blue sky research experiment.
That landscape has violently shifted.
Finally, AI is no longer just a research project. It is rapidly becoming the most geopolitically and economically powerful technology on Earth.
Right, and the market is ruthlessly demanding immediate, massive profits to justify the billions of dollars being spent on data centers and electricity.
Exactly. So the question we have to ask is, how long can any corporate wall, even one built on LeCun's idealism, withstand the immense financial pressure to close the gates and monetize?
That is the question.
Will we look back on this past decade of radically open AI as the foundation of a permanent new era of shared human knowledge, or?
Or will we see it merely as a brief utopian anomaly before the vault doors closed again?
Exactly.
Well, that is a heavy thought, but it's the thought we'll leave you with today. The next time you use an AI tool, whether it's translating a web page, debugging code, or generating a recipe, take a moment to think about the infrastructure beneath it.
Yeah, think about who truly owns the digital roads you're driving on.
And remember how easily they could have been locked away. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time.